So welcome, everyone. Today is Friday, March 17th, 2023, St. Patrick's Day. It is 1:46 p.m. This is the Minnesota Senate Transportation Committee, and we are in room 1150 of the Minnesota Senate building. A quorum is present. In accordance with the rules of the Senate, the following members will be participating remotely in today's hearing: Senator Lang from Olivia, Minnesota, and Senator Herr from St. Paul, Minnesota. Members, we have 10 bills on the agenda, all non-controversial. We'll slide right through with hardly any discussion, we hope. All right. But we are going to start off with the amazing and quite capable, and I think first visit to Senate Transportation this year, Senator Abler. Welcome. Senate File 2499.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm just so happy to be here. And clearly you put the best bill first, and the rest of them are going to be even, you know, not as amazing as this one.
It's so true, yeah.
Sporting the green, Mr. Chair, I'm a proud member of the Daley clan, 1/8 at least. So thank you for hearing the bill. This is actually a small little omnibus of substance use matters with rates and policy changes. Only one section relates to you, in which we'll spend our brief time on that. That has to do with providing driver's licenses for individuals exiting substance abuse at no charge. And I could say it, but my testifier is going to say it again, so I'll just, if you don't mind me going to him, I'll let him tell you the heart of it.
Senator Abler, I think we have an amendment, the A3 amendment.
It's a pretty controversial amendment. It changes a section number.
So would Senator Jasinski like to move the A3?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
All right. So the A3, not quite an author's amendment. It changes on line 10 of page 3. It just changes a subdivision to 12. Very controversial. All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say no. Motion carries. Senator Abler, you're...
And Mr. Zerbis is here, and he can give you the brief story on this, and we can chat about it a bit, and then we'll be on our way.
Welcome, Mr. Zerbis. Please introduce yourself formally for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brian Zerbis. I work with North Star Behavioral Health, a substance use disorder organization in Minnesota. I'm here representing MARCH, the statewide substance use disorder trade group. We represent 80 organizations and more than 2,000 professionals in the state. This bill, and specifically Section 3 that I'll touch on, is part of a larger bill called MARCH's Pathways to Recovery. This bill looks to reduce barriers for clients, improve services, workforce issues, and sustainability. The language in Section 3 is modeled after the Homeless Youth Act from a few sessions ago. We'd worked with the Department of Health and the Department of Human Services over the last two sessions on this bill and on this language specifically. What it does is it allows for reducing barriers for people to regain driver's licenses or IDs, specifically challenges that these individuals experience as they move from treatment or go from place to place. They get their property lost or stolen. So what the language would allow is for people that are eligible for medical assistance that have been to treatment in the last 12 months to be able to reobtain their driver's license or their ID card and have that fee waived. This would be a small part to reduce a barrier for these individuals to allow them to pursue employment and housing and all the good things that we want people to do after they leave treatment. So that concludes my testimony on this section, Mr. Chair. I'll pass it back.
Thank you, Mr. Zerbis. Senator Abler. All right, just wondering if you had anything
more. Well, if there's
more
questions from members, then right. I'll do my closing statement after you at least give people a chance
Great.
To ask
questions. Questions, members. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Abler. I think it's an admirable bill, but I do have to bring up one concern. Our deputy registers have been losing their revenues. They've been asking to be done more work that they have to do, so I got an estimate. I think this is going to cost our deputy registrars about $550,000 per year. So, again, I know Senator Newman kind of referred to as leakages and other things, but this is something that has a little bit of unintended consequences for our deputy registrars because now they're waiving their fees, and that is their business. So I'm a little bit concerned about that aspect of it. But, again, I think the idea is admirable, but I'm still concerned of the unintended consequences of our deputy registrars losing revenue because of it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Abler.
I believe it's the intention, if this should go forward, that it's paid for. We weren't just trying to have it be disappeared. I think that to make whomever whole that's doing this. And I think the number is quite a bit smaller. You think maybe there's 2,000 individuals a year. And there's a fiscal note coming, and I'll give my closing statement now. I know there's a lot of pressure on your budget, but I know this is something that, you know, I know the chair and others are interested in trying to help people move into independence from their substance use time. And so, Mr. Chair, as you're marking up your bill, and to the lead, Jasinski, you know, if there's a few shekels, you just don't know what to do with, this might be a nice place to put it. And as you move the bill, you can move it with or without recommendation, depending upon your view. It goes back to Human Services, and that's where the bulk of the work will be. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Abler, and thank you, Senator Jasinski. I was going to raise the same concern. I think we have another bill that has a similar admirable goal, but leaves the deputy registrars a little bit, and frankly, even the state offices, without some resource to conduct a transaction that does cost. So we'll figure out, we got to figure out how to pay for it.
Senator Thank you, Jasinski. Mr. Chair. I'm glad we're on the same page.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, anything further, members? All right, so Senator Jasinski, this has to be moved to Health and Human Services, if you'd like to make the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Human Services.
I would recommend Senate File 2499, I believe, as amended, correct?
As amended.
As amended, be passed and sent to Human Resources.
Services.
Human Services, I'm sorry.
All right.
I just came from State Gov, sorry.
All in favor of Senator Jasinski's motion, say aye. Aye. Opposed, say no. Motion carries. Thank you, Senator
Abler. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Appreciate it.
All right.
Senator Dribble, welcome to the testifiers table. You have Senate File 1562 ahead in front of us.
Yes, Madam Chair. And maybe we should adopt the amendment to Senate File 1562. It's an author's amendment, but maybe Ms. Boyd or Mr. Greenfield, if you want to explain this.
Is that the A3?
Complicated. The
Senator
A3
Dribble?
Amendment, yes.
Mr. Greenfield, do you want to explain the A3?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Dibble and members of the committee. The A3 is language that was put together by MnDOT to adjust some verbiage in terms of the criteria by which that MnDOT uses to select the technical assistance grants. And then there are some other changes related to an effective date for Section 1. And then in Section 2, there is just a reordering of the priorities in Subdivision 3. So it looks like a big insertion, but really it's just reordering the clauses that were in the as-introduced version. So it's not as daunting of a technical amendment as it may appear on first glance.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greenfield. And with the A3 in front of us as an author's amendment, all in favor of adopting the A3, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Amendment is adopted. Senator Dibble.
So thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File, thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 1562. I'd also like to thank my co-authors, Senator Morrison, Herr, McEwen, and Dietzick. And it is offered to put Minnesota communities in a strong position to compete for federal IIJA competitive grants. As we've heard in previous hearings, just applying for a grant is very complicated and very laborious and prevents a lot of communities from even being able to get out of the starting blocks. We're also aware that the matching dollar amounts is a hardship for a lot of communities, so this proposal is designed to help in that regard as well. It sets forth some of the prioritization criteria, And then, of course, has a lot of other aspects in terms of structuring how exactly the both the technical assistance as well as the matching grant program would work. I will just note for the record, we won't get into it right now because apparently it's quite complicated. There are remains some other technical problems that we have to work on. We intend to lay this bill on the table and work those out as we start to, it's going to go into the larger budget proposal, so we'll have those worked out. And I know Senator Jasinski has concerns, and we'll be taking those, well, you can, of course, state them for the record, but we'll work on those issues offline and have a better, more cleaned up proposal when we see it again. So that is my rough context-setting overview of the proposal, and I know we have a few folks who would like to testify to the measure, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Testifiers, first up, I have Ann Finn. Ann, if you want to come on up and introduce yourself for the record and provide your testimony. And after Ann, I have Emily Murray. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Ann Finn. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. The League is an association, a statewide association of 838 of Minnesota's 855 cities. I want to thank Senator Dibble for carrying this bill. It's a very important one to our members. It also represents the work of many stakeholders, including local government representatives and the Department of Transportation. The funds will be tremendously helpful in advancing local projects funded with Federal Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act dollars. And although it's a small part of the bill, a very significant provision is the technical assistance piece. We hear constantly from our members, especially our 700-plus small cities, that applying for grants is a challenge because they don't have the technical expertise in-house. So having assistance from MnDOT with that part of the process will help deliver some of these projects to our smaller communities where the needs are very great. So thank you again for hearing this bill, and we would very much appreciate your support.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Finn. Emily Murray. And after Ms. Murray, I have Margaret Donahue. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Emily Murray with the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC is a voluntary association representing all of Minnesota's 87 counties. On behalf of AMC and the Minnesota County Engineers Association, we want to offer our support for Senate File 1562. Both AMC and MCEA have long advocated for the need for additional transportation funding, and it takes funding at the local, state, and federal level to meet the needs and demands on our local transportation system. With the passage of the IIJA bill, the state needs to position itself to be able to best utilize those federal funds. We appreciate Chair Dibble's work to create and fund a program that would provide technical assistance to local governments across the state to apply for IIJA discretionary grants. This assistance will be helpful for all counties, but particularly for smaller counties that might not have the resources or the staff available to do this on their own. We also support the inclusion of the significant state matching funds available in the bill. This funding will help local governments with projects that qualify for a federal grant to be able to still apply for those grants if they do not have all of the matching funds in place. And finally, I want to acknowledge and thank Chair Dibble for the inclusion of the A3 amendment. This amendment would put the technical assistance portion of the bill in the best shape for MnDOT to implement and administer, as well as some of the changes to Section 2 relating to the uses of funds. We think the reordering of those uses is makes the most sense. So thank you for that. Finally, we want to thank Chair Dibble and members of the committee for recognizing the importance of maximizing these federal IIJA dollars. And thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Murray. And then last, I have Margaret Donahue. Please introduce yourself for the record and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. On behalf of the member organizations of the Transportation Alliance, local governments, consultants, engineers, contractors, suppliers, transit systems, and other advocates, I would like to thank Chair Dibble for bringing forward this bill. Competing for federal funds at the national level is not an easy process, and Minnesota needs to position itself to compete with larger states, states like Texas, California, Florida, states with huge projects like the $16 billion Hudson Tunnel. Those are the areas that tend to receive significant federal funds. Ensuring that MnDOT, local governments, tribes, transit systems, and other eligible recipients can tap into matching funds will greatly enhance the competitiveness of Minnesota applications and maximize the amount of federal funding our state receives. We appreciate the technical assistance provided for those recipients who struggle with grant applications, the matching funds for local road, transit, and active transportation projects, and the funding for trunk highway projects, which are sometimes led by local governments. And this will help to secure federal IIJA funds. The transportation industry is ready to deliver on the goals of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. Whether it's assistance with grant applications, design and engineering work, or the construction of projects, our members are ready to deliver over the next 4 years, creating and maintaining high-quality careers in the transportation industry. The IIJA represents one of the largest increases in federal transportation funding and has the potential to greatly improve the safety and effectiveness of our transportation system. But as always, it takes a partnership of federal, state, and local resources to make projects happen. With a significant increase in state funding, more dollars can be accessed to ensure more work is done to make our transportation system one that works for all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Donahoe. I apologize for mispronouncing your name. Senator Dibble, do you have other comments you'd like to make?
No, Madam Chair. I'm available for questions, discussion, or amendments.
Members, questions? Senator Jedzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Dibble. I appreciate the work we've done with this so far together, and I appreciate you being willing to work more to get this bill. I really do agree with the technical assistance portion of that. As you've mentioned, many, many small cities don't have the staff to do this, so I think that's great. I'm just curious if MnDOT does have the staff, it would be one concern to make sure that we do have the staff to provide these small cities with that assistance. But I agree with the intent of this bill. I think there's a couple technical and practical things I'd like to work out with you, and I know you're open to that, so I appreciate the time you spent with me and with my staff to get to that point. So thank you again for bringing this bill forward. Very important for Minnesota and our transportation.
Great.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. I do believe that MnDOT, you know, some of these resources will boost MnDOT's ability to help small communities, but I also think it's very likely that independent consultants are going to need to be hired in some instances outside of public jurisdiction. So it'll be money that would be available to also employ consultants to help identify and write up these applications because they're extensive and laborious.
Members, any final questions? All right, per Senator Dibble's instructions, we're going to lay this bill over for possible inclusion and an opportunity to continue working on it.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair and members.
And Senator Dibble, I think you get to stay there, according to your CA.
So,
Senator Dibble.
I was like, wasn't remembering the other bill I had on the agenda, so I'm glad my memory wasn't failing me.
No,
so,
I believe our vice chair is stuck in another committee, so you win the jackpot for Senate File 203.
So thank you, Madam Chair and members. It is my pleasure to present as a co-author of Senate File 203 on behalf of Senator Morrison, which would appropriate $300,000 in each of fiscal years 2024 and 2025 to support the work of the I-494 Corridor Commission and their TMO. They do a wide array of work to help workers in that corridor. They work, it's a transportation management organization that works with employers along that corridor to create greater access to mobility services, whether that's telework, bicycle commuting, carpool, vanpool, transit, et cetera. So I believe Ms. Madison is here from the 494 TMO to come share a little bit more about this grant, which we've made grants to this organization, which has had extremely good results in the past. And so we're continuing that fine work.
Thank you, Chair Dibble. Melissa Madison, do you want to come up and introduce yourself for the record and provide your testimony?
Good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Melissa Madison, the Executive Director of the 494 Corridor Commission and Commuter Services. Thank you, Senator Dibble, for your support for this bill and also for being able to present in Senator Morrison's absence. So the 494 Corridor Commission is made up of five cities along the busiest and most congested portion of 494, including Bloomington, Richfield, Edina, Eden Prairie, and Minnetonka. The commission formed itself back in 1986 when the cities decided to work jointly on strategies to reduce traffic congestion. They did a study of commute mode use amongst people who work along 494, and they found 95% of the people who work along 494 drive alone, and 4% carpool, and 1% take transit. In the same survey, 30% of the commuters indicated a willingness to find someone to carpool, or a willingness to try carpooling, but they needed help to find someone. And then the same survey found 30% of the respondents reported they would be willing to try transit for their commute. And so that is when the 494 Corridor Commission hired our staff, which we call ourselves Commuter Services. You have a handout in your board, in your packet about our annual results. And we focus largely on providing individualized resources to help drive-alone commuters find a carpool partner, to join or start a van pool, receive customized transit itineraries with correlating transit schedules and two free passes to help them try transit, as well as we have great resources for bicycle commuting, since bicycle commuting is very different than, or biking as transportation is very different than biking as recreation, and people need a little more assistance in learning how to bike with traffic. And then we have deep resources for employers, managers, and teleworkers for telework and hybrid work strategies. And thank you to the legislature for your recent past appropriation for us to be able to create Twin Cities Telework. And in the past year, in 2022, we were able to help 331 employers with telework and hybrid work strategies with resources. We work with 1,200 employers to help help us reach their employees with our resources so we can help them try a mode other than driving alone. And in a typical year, we convert 5,500 drive-alone commuters into a sustainable mode, which results in an estimated 56 million vehicle miles avoided as a direct result from our commuter services staff outreach. We survey commuters at the time that we help them to learn the primary commute mode, and after we assist them with resources, we follow up with another survey to find out were they able to use the alternative mode resources that we provided, with what frequency do they now use their alternative mode. Pre-pandemic, 13% of the drive-alones that we assisted permanently converted 5 days per week to using an alternative mode, and 58% indicated that they are now using the mode 3 or more days per week. So that's pre-pandemic. And we do telework surveys to both employers and also 4,000 commuters who have opted in to receive updates from us. We do so on a quarterly basis to both of those audiences to find out what is the adoption rate of telework and hybrid work, as well as what do they predict for their future. And so we provide the results of those surveys to MnDOT and Metro Transit and legislators, employers, and commuters. The 56 million vehicle miles avoided in an average annual year for us equates to 23,000 metric tons of CO2 emissions saved, and it would take over a million mature trees to achieve the same results. Commuter services is largely funded by a congestion mitigation air quality federal grant, which requires local match. And our cities are not able to keep up with the local match required to access the federal grants available. There's now a new a carbon reduction program grant that we would like to apply for, but we do not have the local match to do so. And so we are here asking for your support. The legislature, as Senator Dibble has indicated, the legislature has given us awards in the past, three times previously, with bipartisan support. So in conclusion, on our small budget, we are successful at helping to reduce traffic congestion and thereby helping to reduce emissions and help the state meet its emission targets. And we sincerely appreciate your time and consideration.
Thank you very much, Ms. Madison. Members, are there questions or amendments? Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Dibble, I do remember this from a few years back and am supportive of it. I just noticed it's changed a little bit. Originally it was addressed just to teleworking and the COVID kind of instance in that. And I think it was more one-time funding. So I guess I'm a little bit concerned of the ongoing money, not just usually you'd see a pilot project and you kind of figure this out and then you wouldn't have to do it for a while. And I'm seeing ongoing funding of it is a little bit of a concern. But I agree with the concept of what we're doing. We're trying to alleviate traffic and traffic emissions. But I guess the ongoing money to me is a concern. I would like to see it, you know, a 1 or 2 year program and then hopefully have that wrapped up and then and not the ongoing money is my concern. So, but again, I agree with the concept. I just have some concerns with the ongoing funding.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. So noted, Senator Jasinski. We'll talk further. All right. Thank you.
Members, other questions? All right. Seeing none, this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus. Thank you for your testimony today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you so much. Good to see you. Thank you so much.
All right, Senator McKeown.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to the table. I would welcome you to committee, but you're already in committee. So. Senate File 2591.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I do have I believe it's an A2 amendment.
Yes, we have it in our packets, which is will be the author's amendments. Senator McKeown moves the A2 amendment. Everyone has that in front of them. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion carries. Senator McKeown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 2591 is a very straightforward bill, which will help us meet the 100% carbon-free energy goal that we passed last month by modernizing some of the regulations that control how we connect energy products to the grid. Modern wind and solar projects are often built for public utilities and their customers by developers. The PUC continues to oversee the process, maintaining consumer protection and authority over routing and siting, environmental permitting, and other aspects of the project. But modern projects are often not built directly by public utilities, and MnDOT's permitting structure does not recognize that. Senate File 2591 fixes that by making it clear that entities such as public utilities or developers have the right to use trunk highway right-of-way for electric transmission lines subject to regulation, and an entity that receives a route permit by the Public Utilities Commission for a high-voltage transmission line necessary to interconnect electric power generation with the grid does not necessarily need to be a public utility itself in order to site the line along public roads. These are simple changes, but clarify the regulatory process for applicants who are building clean energy infrastructure for Minnesota customers and for the regulatory agencies that oversee these projects. We have a number of testifiers here to support the bill, including a developer from NextEra who can address these changes from that company's perspective, as well as Great River Energy, who will discuss the changes from the perspective of a public utility. Also, Chair and members, I want to point out that in your folders, there is a packet of letters of support from other public utilities, including Minnesota Power, Missouri, River Energy Systems. Also, I'd note that the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association, I believe there may be a letter actually in the packet from them, but it's identical to the Missouri River letter of support for the bill. Other support letters include one from Clean Energy Economy Minnesota, Minnesota Conservative Energy Forum, and the 100% campaign. So we have a nice coalition of broad support for this bill, Mr. Chair and members, and with that, I would ask our testifiers to also present some testimony.
Thank you. First on the list, I have Commissioner Nancy Dobenberger from the Department of Transportation. Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to testify on Senate File 2591. My name is Nancy Dobenberger, and I am the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Transportation. MnDOT supports efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and understands the need to construct additional electricity transmission lines so we can meet our state's goal of 100% renewable energy by 2040. To that end, MnDOT is in the middle of a public outreach process on rethinking the use of trunk highway right-of-way to accommodate more opportunities for utilities, such as electricity transmission, broadband, and potentially others. We refer to this effort as the Next Gen Highways, for which the first phase started in 2021 and concluded with a report, and now we're into phase two, where we're planning to conclude our transportation partner outreach and stakeholder engagement in early summer of this year. The effort includes consultation with numerous stakeholders, including utilities, Department of Commerce, Public Utilities Commission, and will include local governments and others. This process is designed to take a thoughtful approach to utility accommodation policy changes that we plan to make later this year, and develop any necessary legislation that we were planning to bring forth next year. In the meantime, we are going to allow NextEra to install their transmission lines on trunk highway right-of-way for their project in Dodge and Maurer counties through an exception to our utility accommodation policy. This is part of a pilot project to help us learn how we can be more accommodating to non-public utilities. And it's important to note that MnDOT already allows public utilities to be located on trunk highway right-of-way, and NextEra is not a public utility, so that's why it's taken some time to work through the challenges associated with the project. The language in Section 1 of the bill says MnDOT shall not, or now with the A2 amendment, must not prohibit utilities from placing transmission lines in road rights of way. This language is a concern since it would not allow road authority to deny installation based on safety issues or other roadway operational issues like drainage. This would be highly problematic. Related to utility accommodation statutes, when interstates were first being constructed, it was not uncommon to encounter utilities located within the proposed right-of-way. So at that time, it made sense that utilities be compensated for having to relocate. Since then, state law compensates utilities for their move in interstate right-of-way, and that's continued to apply even when utilities were placed within pre-existing interstate right-of-way. In previous years, MnDOT has proposed that new utilities placed on interstates from this day forward do not qualify for this payment, which is the case on all other roadways in the state. All existing utilities on interstates would be grandfathered in and continue to be relocated at taxpayer expense, but the cost of the current approach can be significant. For example, on the 169-494 interchange project several years ago, utility relocations added up to about 10% of the project cost, about $14 million. So in closing, MnDOT's preference would be to wait until our next-gen highways public consultation process is complete and pursue legislation next year if needed. If you do move this bill forward this year, MnDOT respectfully requests that Section 1 be modified and you amend the bill to specify that utility relocation costs on interstates be at the expense of the utility for any new utility installations. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I stand for questions.
So, Senator Dobenberger, I did see an amendment that had the gist of that request, but I don't see it here today. Is that not quite ready for the prime time, or what's the status of that language?
Mr. Chair, thanks for the question. I am not certain about the status of that language.
So it crossed my inbox. Senator McKeown.
Thank you, Chair Dibble. Thank you for the question. And yes, I have also been made aware of some of the concerns that the commissioner has just raised. And I certainly think that we can, in particular, the safety issue that has been raised, I think that that is an extremely reasonable concern that perhaps we can make an amendment to change some language or add something to account for that. I do want to also engage in some conversation about the compensation issue as well. I don't know if the proposed change that we've seen so far will necessarily, if we're ready to accept it right now, but in short, Mr. Chair, we're happy to continue working on this bill and to make changes as needed with the coalition to accommodate if as we can.
So I believe this bill needs to move to energy. Is that correct?
That sounds correct, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. So I'm slightly uncomfortable with transportation policy fixes being done over in energy, but here we are, deadline week, we got to keep this bill moving. So yeah. I would just request that I be engaged and the minority lead be engaged in the conversation of those amendments going forward.
Very good.
Senator Jasinski.
Mr. Chair, and thank you for that, because I just want to recognize it again. So I want to make sure, and going back to what Senator Newman and I always refer to as leakages, so the funds to relocate the utilities would come out of trunk highway funds as proposed now before the amendment. Is that correct?
Commissioner Dobenberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator. Currently, just for the interstate utility relocations, those need to be compensated by MnDOT. So what I'm proposing is that, much like all the other state highways where the cost of relocating would be on the utility, that we would make that the same for the interstates as well.
And Commissioner Dobber, I would be supportive of that. Senator.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, that's my concern. I want to make sure that it's not coming out of trunk highway funds. That's an important thing. I agree with the safety 100%, but again, I just get Senator Dibble and myself are always a little touchy of those trunk highway funds to make sure money's not coming out of those, to make sure we have money for our roads and our bridges. So, and I don't know if we address that in this committee or if it's in energy or where we can do it, or will it, what's the best point where we can address this to make sure, or I suppose we could do it on the floor, but I'd want those concerns addressed before it went to the floor, or have an amendment on the floor that you would support in the theory of what we're talking about today.
So we have an offer, Mr. Greenfield. We can.
I'm open to that.
Mr. Greenfield can try to work on an amendment. We don't have to do it on the fly. We have some more testifiers. So if you want to take your time to to think about it and come up with some language. Maybe we can do some little fix up here. Senator McKeown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do think that some of our other testifiers may have some additional input into this discussion as well. So perhaps we can iron out something today.
Wonderful. All right. So, Senator or Commissioner Dobenberg, you're going to stick close?
Yes.
All right. Great. Let's move on to our testifiers. We have a number of them. Daniel, I'll call up two at a time. Daniel Herzig from Nextera. I'm sorry, Danelle. Sorry, my apologies. From Nextera Energy Resources and Beth Soholt from Clean Grid Alliance. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Dibble and members of the committee. Appreciate the time today. My name is Danelle Herzig. I am Director of Renewable Development for Nextera Energy Resources. I have worked on projects all over the country, including as a project developer for a number of projects that have gone commercially operational here in the state, and additionally, projects that are going through permitting right now. Nextera is a world-leading generator of renewable energy from the wind and sun. We've invested over $1 billion in Minnesota clean energy to date, dating back over 20 years. And we have plans to invest at least another $1 billion in renewable projects in the coming years. These projects are being built to benefit Minnesota ratepayers, but are also needed to meet the nation-leading goals and requirements set by this legislator last month. Nextera strongly supports SF2591 because it helps resolve two issues. The first issue is how challenging it currently is to bring clean energy projects online, considering the poor state of our state's transmission system. The second issue is the difficulty of getting successful clean energy projects through Minnesota's unpredictable regulatory environment. Regarding transmission, Nextera and other developers are having to become increasingly creative in order to connect clean energy projects to the grid. In the case of one project known as Dodge County Wind, that means building the project over 25 miles away from an existing Great River Energy substation that has adequate capacity to bring Dodge County Wind online. Unfortunately, that particular project was unnecessarily delayed by at least 2 years because agencies appeared not to have contemplated a developer building a transmission line on behalf of a public utility. As such, there's no clear direction in Minnesota law allowing developers such as Nextera to stand in the shoes of the utility that contracted with us to build this project. That confusion has added significant delay to at least one project and threatens to add delay to current and future projects. We are grateful to be working with Minnesota Department of Transportation, which has agreed to greenlight Dodge County Wind as a pilot project, which will get the permitting timeline moving along again. While that action removes a hurdle for one project, a more complete solution is absolutely required. SF2591 takes an important step toward that solution by clarifying that a developer receiving a route permit from the PUC to serve Minnesota electric energy customers is treated the same as the public utility that receives the benefit of the electricity. The simple fix gives the state agencies the clarity they need to process projects in a more predictable and efficient fashion. SF2591 is a common sense solution. It removes a very significant blockage to meeting Minnesota's carbon-free energy objectives and supports low-cost, reliable clean energy generation the state's utilities needs to meet the goals. Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Ms. Herzig. Ms. Soholt, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Beth Soholt. I'm the Executive Director of Clean Grid Alliance. Clean Grid Alliance is a St. Paul-based nonprofit organization working to advance renewable energy in the Midwest. Our members include NGOs working on a transition to clean energy and renewable energy developers. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of SF2591 that gives generation developers that are serving Minnesota customers the ability to construct transmission lines parallel to existing transportation rights of way. As Minnesota utilities strive to meet Minnesota's 100% carbon-free requirement, significant amounts of new generation like wind, solar, and storage will be necessary. New clean energy projects need to interconnect with the existing electric grid. Because transmission capacity on the grid is in short supply, developers must construct longer tie lines to reach an electric substation. Allowing developers to parallel existing transportation right-of-way is a wise use of land, minimizes impacts to private landowners, and uses a resource Minnesotans are already paying for. I want to emphasize how important it is for Minnesota to find expeditious ways to site new transmission lines and interconnect new generation, like wind and solar farms. Generation developers actually report having to walk away from developing projects in this state because they cannot find a place on the transmission grid to interconnect projects. That is the opposite of what needs to happen in Minnesota to meet the state's 100% carbon-free requirement by 2040. Transmission takes a long time to construct, 7 to 10 years, so we need tools in the interim to allow renewable energy projects to move forward. SF 2591 is a step in that direction. And I just want to quickly share with the committee results of a survey by the NextGen Highway that the commissioner, NextGen Highway Initiative that the commissioner mentioned. The survey concluded Minnesota voters overwhelmingly support the building of electric transmission lines alongside existing right-of-way. In the statewide survey, 79% of respondents prefer building electric transmission lines alongside existing power lines, highways, rail, and other existing public rights of way. That compares to just 3% who prefer private land such as farms, forests, or neighborhoods. And this poll was conducted on February 21st and 22nd. So in conclusion, Senate File 2591 is prudent policy and one that will advance Minnesota clean energy goals. I urge support for the bill and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Soholt. Questions, members? All right, I'll call up the next two testifiers I have on my list, Mark Rathman from Great River Energy and Lucas Franco from La Yuna. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Rathman, please introduce yourself formally for the record and proceed. Thanks.
Chairman Dibble and members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Mark Rathman, manager of renewable resources at Great River Energy, a Minnesota cooperative, generation and transmission cooperative. Thank you for the opportunity to be here and speak today. Great River Energy is a not-for-profit wholesale electric co-op. We provide electric service at cost, with any margins going back to the members we serve. We do not have shareholders. We have members that own and receive electric service from Great River Energy. We serve two-thirds of Minnesota geographically and parts of Wisconsin, and generate electricity and transmit it through high voltage power lines to 27 member owner cooperatives and customers that provide retail electric service to homes, farms, and businesses across our state. GRE has been thoughtfully planning the transition of its power supply portfolio for more than a decade. And that transition includes a large amount of renewable energy. Our current portfolio is a balanced and cost-effective mix of reliability resources and renewable energy. We have signed more than 1,600 megawatts of competitive fixed-price wind contracts developed by our partners like NextEra, taking advantage of their economies of scale and supply chain relationships. These resources serve our member owners as a source of carbon-free energy and as a hedge to the wholesale energy market. In the next 3 years, we expect the last 900 megawatts of that wind generation to come online, around 500 megawatts of which is right here in Minnesota. Development of these resources is critical to our business plan and how we've built ourselves as a cooperative, and they play a central role to meeting the new Minnesota carbon-free and renewable energy standards. The changes we are discussing here today would help to ensure that all of our members' wind gets to market and provides an economic development opportunity for Minnesota to help keep the renewable development needed for compliance with the new state standards in the state. Let's find a way to work together as utilities, developers, and as a state to ensure we meet our renewable energy goals. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And Mr. Franco, welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Dibble and members of the committee, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Lucas Franco. I'm here on behalf of Leuna, Minnesota, and North Dakota. We're a union of more than 14,000 proud men and women who build and maintain our state's critical infrastructure. I'm here to speak in favor of Senate File 2591. Our clean energy economy provides more than just affordable and reliable electricity. It also provides jobs and economic opportunity to thousands of Minnesotans, including many Leuna members. This is especially true in southern Minnesota, where utility-scale wind projects have created thousands of family-sustaining union jobs for local tradespeople and generated thousands of megawatts of clean energy. This wellspring of reliable work is threatened by challenges to permitting and building new transmission. Our shift towards clean energy sources requires a substantial build-out of our transmission system. Yet building new transmission lines is profoundly challenging, and there is significant congestion in the MISO queue. Major wind and solar projects have been, and unfortunately will continue to be, delayed unless we find ways to accelerate transmission development. Senate File 2591 is a common sense step towards addressing our transmission woes. It creates a more predictable and efficient path for new transmission development by streamlining the use of existing right-of-way in the construction of new transmission lines. This bill makes it easier to site transmission lines while respecting local landowners. It also preserves important PUC oversight. Ultimately, it is a step towards creating a process that works at the speed of commerce. We encourage the authors to continue engaging with MnDOT, as we know they have been, to work out any concerns from the agency. Senate File 2591 is key to meeting our clean energy goals. It will streamline transmission development and help us ultimately realize the full job-creating potential of our transition to clean energy. Thank you for the opportunity to comment today.
Thank you, Mr. Franco. Questions, members of either testifier? All right. So that's a list of those who have signed up. Would anyone else like to testify? Please come forward. Mr. Evans. Welcome, Mr. Evans.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Rick Evans with Xcel Energy. First of all, I apologize for not getting a letter in the packet, but I do want to express our support for the bill that Senator McEwen has brought before you today. We worked with her on some additional language and do support the bill. Since I may not get another chance to speak, I just want to say that the issue of the cost of moving infrastructure on interstate highways is a issue that was not raised with me before, and so I think there's probably a longer discussion to be had on that issue with the utilities and what impact that decision might make on the ability to build transmission in the future. So I would hope the committee, whatever action you may take today, that we would have an opportunity to have a broader discussion with the department and members about what that could mean for the construction of transmission going forward.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Questions, Mr. Evans? All right, members, to the bill. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, just echoing that first concern of where that money is coming from to do that. I know if it gets pushed to the utilities, then it would go to the ratepayers. And if it gets pushed to trunk high funds, that comes out of our money for roads and bridges. So we have conflicting things here of how that's funded. And both of those I'm concerned about because, again, I know if it gets pushed to the utilities and they're going to put that on the ratepayers and our residents are going to be paying more. And if it gets pushed to the MnDOT, then we're losing money for our roads and bridges that we should be doing. So trying to find an equitable spot for that money for those relocations would be an important thing to me. I know they're working on a possible amendment here, but again, that's my number one. Again, we're all about safety. I know we're all going to go towards renewables, so I think we have to have that access. But again, where that money is coming from and is the most important thing that I'm concerned about. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Jasinski. What is the status of our possible language?
Mr. Chair, it is underway, being produced by the drafting support team up in Senate Council. I'm not sure as to the status of the arrival of said amendment, but it has been, the language has been sent along that MnDOT has provided to the various people.
Great. I know that two things. One is I've indicated to Senator McEwen that we'd give it a try, but you know, we look at the language and it needs more work, and she's not comfortable with taking the language today. We'll just hold on that, and then at some point we'll move the bill onto energy and just keep working on it. And I also know Senator McEwen has to present a couple bills in judiciary, which I do too, by the way. So it's going to be interesting to figure out getting ourselves around this building in the middle of all these different hearings that are going on. So anything further at this point, members? Senator Jasinski?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, just one comment, and I just found it kind of humorous, Ms. Herzig's conversation about, and I think it's the nicest way I've ever heard it put, as Minnesota's unpredictable permitting process. And that's the nicest way I've heard it put in a long time, but I've heard it more put as difficult and dangerous and very, you know, so again, that was probably the nicest way I heard about it, so I just wanted to comment on that. Sorry.
So why don't we do this? Why don't we lay the bill on the table, and if we're able to come back to it later on in this agenda, we'll do that.
Very good. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator McEwen. All right, moving on, Senator Carlson. All right, Senator Jasinski, do you want to? You got a whole program of bills here. Why don't we get you started on your bills? Welcome to the table, Senator Jasinski. We just take them in order that they appear on the agenda. If that works for you, we'll start off with Senate File 622.
Mr. Chair, I didn't bring my agenda here, but I think 622 I have right here in front of me. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File number 622 in front of you today is, we've been talking about this for a while. This is a post-COVID pandemic public transportation study. Something we're asking about, obviously, since COVID has happened, we've seen a lot of transportation ways change, and what this does is ask for a study that Met Council would pay for and look at our transportation ways we've changed our transportation modes since COVID. So with that, I would ask stand by for any questions and ask for your support.
So Senator Jasinski, we have an A2 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm told we do. It's not in my file, but I'd like to offer the A2 amendment.
All right. We'll let you review your A2 amendment.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Things have been changing awfully fast around here.
So yeah, well, we posted these bills really late. So
working on several different bills. So again, thank you for your working with me to get these bills done. So the A2, let staff go through what it changes.
Mr. Greenfield, are you able to help us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I believe Ms. Boyd drafted these amendments, but I think these are just some small language changes to clarify the scope of the study. And on page 2, line 3, there's just a date that needed changed. This amendment was particularly picked up by the House version of this bill. So I think one is just a pure technical change, and the other is a more language clarification for the second instruction there.
All right. So, somewhat technical. So, Senator Jasinski moves the A2 amendment. All in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion carries. I know we have the Met Council is present, the University of Minnesota is present. They'd be able to hop up to the table if we have questions of them. But to the bill members. All right. So, all right, so Senator Jasinski, I think we're ready to entertain a motion if there are no questions or no other testimony. And I think you can move the bill as amended to finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just before you, I want to thank Mr. Shetton for working with us on this one as well from Met Council. With that, I'd ask for to approve Senate File Number 622 be approved and forwarded to finance.
As amended.
As amended. Thank you.
All right. All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say no. Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Zasinski. Next up is your Senate File 1545, the Caleb Erickson Memorial Highway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This is really a technical change. We did this bill last year, and there was a wrong township listed, so it was caught not until after it passed. So this changes that to incorporate the correct township for the highway that is designated. So with that, I'd ask for your approval.
All right. Questions, members?
And Mr. Chair, I just want to apologize. Former Senator Perry would like to be here today to present the bill, but he was had another conflict. He could not be here today. So thank you.
So no Perry Dice today?
No.
That's what we used to call his committee, Perry Dice. So
I've never heard that one, but thank you for sharing that with me.
So I'm shuffling here. All right, so Senator Dzinski moves Senate, if there's nothing further, did I already ask that? Anyone want to testify? Nope. Senator Dzinski moves Senate File 1545 to the floor. Recommended to pass and refer to the Senate floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dzinski, now you've got two takes on the same subject. So if you want to proceed with however you want to handle presenting Senate File 1823 and Senate File 1859.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the best would be go for Senate File 1823, which is the appropriation first. So this would appropriate money to the Corridors of Commerce. And with that, I do have an A1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
All right. So Senator Dzinski moves the A1 amendment to Senate File 1823. All in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion carries. All right, Senator Dzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have fiscal staff go through what that this will do for the bill and what the appropriation will do. Thank you.
All right. Council, or?
I'm sorry, Ms. Boyd.
Ms. Boyd.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dzinski, thank you. The A1, the bill as it stands has an ongoing $100 million $100 million annual appropriation from the general fund for the Corridors of Commerce program. The A1 would add a second appropriation. The A1 also adds a line to that $100 million a year appropriation saying that the commissioner may use up to 17% of the amount for program delivery. That is standard language that we usually include with Corridors of Commerce appropriations, including in the biennial budget. Then the A1 also adds a second appropriation of $10 million in each year ongoing from the general fund to MnDOT for readiness advancement activities on Corridors of Commerce projects. And then there's some criteria about what those activities are.
All right. So to the bill, members, any question? Our intent is to lay this over. But Senator Dzinski, did you want to speak to the Corridors of Commerce and any concluding comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just again, I think it's a very important program for our state. It's been used very well on some certain areas that definitely need some transportation upgrades. It has a big process, which we'll go to the next bill on how the how these are selected, and we've changed that a little bit to try and improve over years, so I think it's good. And just a comment on the one on 17%, maybe MnDOT can clarify that some people that seems awfully high, but that does include design in there as well, above just administrative costs. So that's been brought to my attention a couple times about that 17%, but that does include design fees in there as well. So again, I think it's a great program. It showed some great success across the state, and with that, I'd ask for your support in the funding of this program.
Thank you. Yeah, that always pops up at people. I think, naming it program delivery might help a little bit, help people understand, because it's not just administrative overhead, but it's actual, work that needs to be done. You have to design and study and do all the engineering and everything. So I appreciate your touching on that. All right. So with that, members will lay Senate File 1823 on the table for possible inclusion in the budget bill. And we'll move on to, I don't know if I need to tap the gavel, I'll do that. We'll move on to Senate File 1859.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that the President of the Senate, Senator Champion, always says you move things through awfully fast when you speak. So I'm glad we're on that same pace today, especially on this day, on a Friday, on St. Patrick's Day. So with this one, I bring forward Senate file number 1859. I do apologize. There was two actual original bills out, one that Representative Torkelson's been working on for time, and as well as Senator Newman. We've looked at both of those. I've been a co-author in one and an author of another. And we're trying to merge those bills to kind of take the best of both worlds and work on it. And I know I've had many discussions with you on that, and I thank you for your openness to work together to continue to make this bill better. But I'd like to offer the A1, which is brings the two bills together, and ask for your approval with the A1 amendment.
All right. Members, so Senator Jasinski offers the A1. I think it's at your places in your packets. It's a delete everything. All in favor of the A1, say aye. Aye. Opposed, say no. Motion carries. Senator Jasinski to the A1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that, then I'd ask Mr. Greenfield to go through the changes and go through the bill and to make it go a little bit quicker. He'll go through it much better because he's more familiar with it than I am since they've been working on it for the last day and a half. So thank you.
Yeah, I think we caused Mr. Frazier and Mr. Greenfield to stay up all night. So I apologize for that. Mr. Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Jasinski. The underlying bill that was substituted here in the delete everything is Senate File 621 from this year's session. So for people following along at home, that's the bill that the language is mostly pulled from, but I'll just identify some of the key changes. Section 1 defines terms in the Corridors of Commerce statute to include the greater Minnesota area and the metropolitan area. Section 2 is the program authority as Senator Dibble was just talking about in paragraph D on page 2, line 5, where the commissioner may use up to 17% of the appropriation under the Corridors of Commerce program for project scoring, ranking, and selection that's brought in later in the bill. Section 3 has the project eligibility requirements. There weren't any changes to that from Senate File 621. And the Section 4 on page 3 is the substantive changes to the project selection process criteria. As you'll note in paragraph C, recommendations submitted for consideration have to be screened for either projects in the greater Minnesota area and for projects located in the metropolitan area. There wasn't any change to that from Senate File 621. Paragraph D on page 4, I'm sorry for blitzing through if there's any other questions. There is a reference on page 4 and paragraph D at the end talking about written recommendations as provided by subdivision 5A. And then there's a change the next line down on page 4, line 27 into page 4, line 28. That essentially codifies into what MnDOT already does for the allocation of certain criteria for the corridors of commerce and just specifies the point systems that they actually use. So MnDOT uses a 100-point scale for the 8 criteria in the new paragraph D, 1 through 8 there on page 4. This just formalizes the point assignment process. And then in paragraph E, this essentially wraps in the change for funding that is available in the metropolitan area. I am noting that one change might not have got picked up, but I will keep moving on to page 5 and come back to the possible change that might need to be corrected. On page 5, there is a breakdown of the funding for projects in the metropolitan area and then projects in the greater Minnesota area, as you can see there at the top of page 5. And then on section 5 is the new subdivision 5A for the Corridors of Commerce statute. That requires the Commissioner of Transportation to compile a list of all projects that were submitted and transmit the list to each legislator and to the governor, describes the list and describes the work to be done. And each within 30 days of the project list being transmitted by the commissioner of MnDOT, each legislator and governor may submit to the commissioner a written recommendation for one project to the list. So when a legislator or the governor weighs in on a project, the commissioner must assign one point for that input. And then on section 6, the only change from Senate File 621 is this, instead of a four-year window, should be is now a five-year window for where the partnerships and the projects are to be submitted to the Commissioner of Transportation. Under the iteration in 621, that was a four-year window. And the only other change is the is the time in which this occurs, which is the beginning of fiscal year 2028. So I'm going to briefly step aside to talk about whether a change needs to be made in Section 4 in terms of an oral amendment, but everything else is mostly folded in from Senate File 621 with just a few small changes.
All right, questions, members? I think we do have a testifier we can go to and then maybe start with the committee work. So Mr. Zart from the CGMC. Oh, and Ms. Donahoe.
Yes, well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Shane Zart with the firm Flaherty & Hooden, representing the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. And wanted to maybe comment on the previous bill, too, but for the sake of efficiency and keeping the committee moving today, since they both relate to the Corridors of Commerce program, we'll do it all at once. So first of all, thank you to Senator Jasinski, and thank you to the Chair Dibble and the committee for hearing both of these bills today. As many of you know, and the Corridors of Commerce program, I believe, turns 10 this year, and you were instrumental, Chair Dibble, in its creation 10 years ago. It has been a program that has finally gotten some funding to the types of projects in both Greater Minnesota and the metro area for safety and efficiency that folks would often say, they're never going to finish that in my lifetime. And the Highway 14s and 23s that have benefited from that, it's been spectacular in helping make progress on those. So I do want to comment on one thing. The amendment adopted on the previous bill to set aside some money for project readiness development. That is, we think, an important component of the program going forward. As the discussions this session have taken place and our members have become more and more engaged in where corridors of commerce might go, we've continued to identify projects out there that are potential future corridors of commerce projects but may not quite meet the readiness criteria, not just for the Corridors of Commerce program, but for even future consideration for federal dollars. So some money set aside to continue project development and environmental engineering and those types of activities that occur pre-construction is we think, vitally important. On the changes to the program that Senator Jasinski has in Senate File 1859, the amendment that's before you, I think that as we're continuing to digest both, you know, what might be coming over for the other chamber, what Senator Jasinski has here today, but appreciate his efforts to improve the program, to meld a couple different approaches here, and I think overall, and part of the discussion that continues from last year, is solving a lot of concerns the department had with the administration, the efficiency in project selection and the criteria, but then also the concerns that constituents and advocacy, corridor advocacy organizations, stakeholders throughout the state had, even about the geographic balance of those dollars. A couple things I'll note, too. I can see in here, some of the things that we're working to do, even in the metro area. I noted at the beginning that I think you announced that Senator Lang is attending from Olivia. And one of the challenges we saw in the 2017-2018 round of project selection was that highways like 212 that runs through Carver County is particularly a metro area project, but if Senator Lang was going to join us next week, he's probably going to bring in 212 to do it and cross through that dangerous stretch of 212 through Carver County. But because that was a metro area project, profiles a lot like a rural two-lane dangerous project, would have trouble competing sometimes in the metro category. So I think both this approach, the approach that the House has proposed, have mechanisms to address issues like that, those roads that serve Greater Minnesota, access between Greater Minnesota and the metro. But appreciate the continued attention, continued work on this program. It sounds like there's an ongoing discussion that we'll still be able to have yet this session about which of these approaches is going to be the one to move forward. But so I'll stop there and just say thank you for hearing it today.
Thank you, Mr. Zart. Questions for the witness. Ms. Donahoe, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe, Director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. And I also just wanted to take a minute to stress the importance of ongoing funding for Corridors of Commerce. This has been a really successful program with over $1 billion invested in 34 major projects around the state. And as has been discussed, these were projects that had been languishing for many, many years. Our members are very concerned about stable, dependable funding, and having the $100 million in the base would be very, very helpful in terms of being able to plan, come up with matching funds, build projects more efficiently. So I just wanted to put in our urging that that be included in the budget for the department going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Message received. Mr. Greenfield informed me that there's no need to make any adjustments or adjustments to the A1. To the committee, to the bill, questions, anything further? So Senator Zinke, I think our intent is to lay this over for possible inclusion more conversation. And yes, we'll definitely have a slightly different take on the matter coming from the other body, but that's all good. So. And I think we'll end up with a better product in the end. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple final comments. Again, I think this is a great program. It really does bring a mix of metro and rural Minnesota together. I know a lot of the projects in the metro are much more complex and expensive, but then in rural Minnesota, you have a lot more lane miles. So it addresses both things. There's a lot of things that MnDOT does through their CHIP and their STIP as far as those things, but this is really a kind of a community, commerce-driven, legislative-driven project, which I think it brings a lot of significance and help to Minnesota. It also provides a regional balance to try and balance out where the money is spent. And then I'll comment one on the Corridors of Commerce, and when Highway 14 was funded, that was a project that had been waiting for many, many years. And once that project went through, we saw hundreds of millions of dollars invested along that corridor just because of those improvements that were done. So I think that's the biggest thing we have to remember. It's not only just the funding the highways, but what kind of commerce and what kind of economic development happens because of these projects. And that's been really huge along Highway 14 as well. I know it is on 23 and Highway 212 as well. So again, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for working with me to make this bill better, these two bills come together and work with the other body to make sure that we can get it across the finish line and provide that funding that is ongoing. So thank you again, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members.
So two things. My apologies, I know that was the final word, but I do want to see if anyone else wants to testify.
No problem.
All right.
Seeing none, then, Mr. Chair, I'd ask for approval of Senate File 1859 as amended to be laid over for possible inclusion.
So actually, I think we're going to dual track this, and so okay. We'll send it on its own to the floor, but also probably absorb it into the larger bill as well, so which we can do. We don't have to lay it over. So why don't we... move Senate File 1859 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion carries.
Thank you again.
All right, Senator Carlson, you get to bring us home. Oh, except we have to revert back to Senator McCune's bill at some point. So, Senator Carlson, you have Senate File 2650.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, can you first tell me what room am I in, what committee am I in? And I have Senate File 2650, which is a rather small bill that appropriates money for small community partnerships. And I have an author's amendment, an A1 author's amendment, to make a slight change to the direction that the money goes. So it's instead of the University of Minnesota Extension, it's to the Regional Sustainable Development Partnership.
All right, so Senator Carlson moves the A1 author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion carries. Senator Carlson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I believe that we have another amendment from Senator Jasinski. An A2 amendment?
Oh, okay. Senator Jasinski, would you like to move the A2?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
And I think, members, this will just make the appropriation directly to the university rather than passing it through the Department of Transportation. And I see a thumbs up from MnDOT. So yeah. All in favor of the A2, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no. Motion carries. To the bill, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This Senate file 2650, it would appropriate $2.5 million in fiscal year 24, $2.5 million in fiscal year 25 from the general fund to actually now it's to the University of Minnesota, to enter into an agreement with their partnerships to implement infrastructure project analysis and development partnerships with small communities. The agreement would need to include partnership activities within the university, within the university entities, like the Regional Sustainable Development Partnership and the Center for Transportation Studies, and it would need to provide support and assistance to small communities, and that includes methods to incorporate climate resiliency and sustainability into their work. The agreement would need to prioritize support for those communities and tribal governments that have sufficient capacity to undertake project development and apply for state or federal infrastructure grants. And Mr. Chair, I have to provide some more background, Mr. Kyle Shelton from the University of Minnesota.
Welcome, Mr. Shelton. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. Nice to be here today. I am Kyle Shelton, the Director of the Center for Transportation Studies at the University of Minnesota. It's great to be here with you. As you've already been talking about a bit today, I think the historic investments we're seeing in infrastructure across the country really give this moment, lead to this moment to needing to see the support and development of community-driven, asset-based infrastructure improvements across our communities. As we heard earlier today, many small communities lack the bandwidth and technical expertise to be able to get these projects together and get them through the grant-making process. We're hoping that this program is a way to support those communities and partner with those communities, learning from what their infrastructure needs are, not just in transportation, but across infrastructure systems. Excuse me. And as Senator Carlson said, help them form projects and develop projects that can be competitive for discretionary funding as a part of IIJA, IRA, preparing better projects for your bonding considerations and other funding sources going in the future. We're proposing to do this in two formats. One would be an extensive long-term involvement led by Minnesota Design Center. My colleague Mary Vogel is with me today. And the Regional Sustainable Development Partnerships, which is a part of University of Minnesota Extension. RSDP in particular is very grassroots oriented. They have five citizens councils across greater Minnesota and have helped to create a series of projects, countless projects over several decades that really reflect and start with community needs, which is a part of how we are orienting this program. And then the second version, the second part of this program would be to really rely on the university's system's deep bench of subject matter experts and folks with deep experience in a range of infrastructure questions, again, including transportation, but going to things like water systems and stormwater and everything in between. We know there's a huge, huge need of infrastructure projects, and the university system and all of its campuses have folks who can help join and learn from communities across the state, and we're excited to do that with the other another part of this program, helping on everything from design and pre-engineering potentially to tracking and collecting data on socioeconomic impacts of projects, potentially ranging all the way up to grant writing if that's what communities need. We see this as a chance to really work with those local partners. And I think importantly, as I've talked, you know, thinking about infrastructure is out of silos. It's not just transportation, it's transportation and economic development tied together. Resilience is tied into all of that, and we think this is a program to really help communities ideate on that type of cross-sector project and really think about how they get the most value out of the projects they're putting together. And I did also want to flag that we see this as one effort in the state's larger set of planks to address technical assistance needs and community support. We think it's a really valuable proposal in order to help on the deep level of project development and project ideation, but we also want to make sure we're really dovetailing with other technical assistance and support programs that already exist or are being considered right now. and have been doing that with partners at the university and are excited to do that with you all and state agency as well, as to make sure that the barrier of entry to communities and identifying how to get this assistance and with whom to work is as low as possible so we can serve their needs first and foremost. So with that, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Questions, members? Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And probably just a clarification. We talk about small communities, but there's not really a definition. I know small cities are under 5,000, but when you're saying small communities, I don't know if we really have a definition of what small communities are. Where does that fall within? I don't think there's a definition. Again, statewide, I know when we talk about small cities, that's 5,000 and less, but small communities, I don't think we have a definition.
Yeah, and we hadn't yet.
Mr. Shelton.
Thank you, Chair. We hadn't yet defined that. We'd be happy to talk more about that. The way we had been discussing it is not necessarily limited at just two cities, for example, townships and potentially smaller counties as well. So we didn't want to put a definition and label that this would be the only community type and size that we'd be working with. But certainly happy to work with you all to define that in more detail.
Senator Jasinski.
Mr. Chair, then at what point do we define that, or when, if we approve it today, how do we have that input to what that small communities means? I haven't seen it not defined, so.
Senator Jasinski, I thought we had to move this on to higher ed, but it turns out we don't, so we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion.
Okay. Yeah, if we could just get a definition of what that is to further clarify what we're talking about, because it's pretty much wide open as what that would be, so I think we'd like to see some definition, or at least I would. Thank you.
All right. So Senator Carlson, on its way to the larger bill, we'll have those conversations. So other questions or discussion, members? All right. Would anyone else like to testify to Senate File 2650? I also want to acknowledge Mary Vogel in the audience and all the work that she's done along these lines for many, many years. And this is a great initiative, part of which is her idea, along with Tom Fisher at the Design Center. So. Appreciate your fine work. With that, anything further, Senator Carlson?
I have nothing further other than I will work with Senator Jasinski. I probably have anything smaller than Faribault.
All right. Thank you. So with that, Senate File number 2650 is laid over for possible inclusion. And Senator Carlson, you are up again with Senate File 2804.
Senate File 2804. Is some appropriations for transit service. Senate File 2804 would appropriate $22.24 million in fiscal year 24 and $7.2 million in fiscal 25 from the general fund to the Metropolitan Council for financial assistance and serve replacement service providers, and also known as, these are also known as opt-out providers, for their service expansion improvements, vehicle purchases, and so on, capital improvements. And Mr. Chair and members, this is a really good bill, and it's very interesting, but a lot of people don't know what microtransit is. And I'd like to describe just a bit of it for those who may not be familiar. Microtransit is an on-demand, curb-to-curb service that uses scheduling software to book route ride requests, servicing both first and last mile door-to-door connections. Riders can use an app to order a ride. A small bus picks up the individual at their door, drops them off at their destination, and while often making between 3 and 4 stops on the way to pick up and drop off other riders. During the height of the pandemic, the service was the lifeline to transit-dependent individuals and seniors who needed a timely and safe way to get to their appointments and purchase groceries. Microtransit service has outgrown pre-pandemic levels and continues to see growth, with demand regularly being higher than capacity, which causes more extended wait times. This bill will help suburban transit providers to continue to expand their current microtransit service area and procure more buses without having to reduce their express services. And with that, I have Mr. Courtney Jasper with the first person here is Patrick Chilton from Minnesota Valley Transit Authority.
Welcome, Mr. Chilton. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
For the record, Patrick Chilton, Minnesota Valley Transit Authority, here on behalf of the Suburban Transit Association. Thank you, Chair Dibble, and thank you, Senator Carlson. And I'd also like to thank Senators Jasinski, Port, and Coleman for signing on to this bill and providing such critical investments to suburban transit. Southwest Transit brought microtransit to Minnesota by introducing the first of its kind Prime service in 2015. Prime currently operates a fleet of 22 vehicles and provides approximately 112,000 rides in 2022 and is currently averaging 520 rides per day. Minnesota Valley Transit Authority started our Connect service in 2019 with two retired cutaways and are now operating a fleet of 19 small vehicles and cutaway buses, providing over 87,000 rides in 2022 and are now averaging over 330 rides per day. And in fact, we actually nearly set a record for daily ridership this Tuesday with 357 rides and saw significant reductions in cancellations and delay times. Microtransit operates similarly to the on-demand rides Uber or Lyft offers, except at a far more affordable rate, and relies on technology to improve service efficiencies and reduce costs in less dense areas. Microtransit is conceptualized as a first and last mile solution for work commuters, however, it has become a mobility lifeline for thousands living and working in the suburbs who have serious mobility needs. Virtually all demographic segments use microtransit in the Twin Cities suburbs, but its non-emergency medical, grocery and food bank, and work connections are needed for disadvantaged and senior populations. The vast majority of Connect rides are booked through MBTA's newly introduced Ride MBTA app, though riders can still book a ride by calling into our customer service center during business hours or to an independent call center outside of business hours. Prime riders with Southwest can also book their trip through the Southwest app or by calling their dedicated Prime line during business hours. As Senator Carlson noted, microtransit service has outgrown pre-pandemic levels and continues to see growth, with that growth often outstripping capacity and causing sometimes significant wait times. Across STA providers, users of on-demand service tend to be predominantly women. They tend to earn less than $50,000. They're typically under the age of 30 or over the age of 50. And just as a note, English is the most represented primary language. However, Spanish, Somali, Hindi, and several other languages are present with microtransit riders across the suburbs. Since 1996, over 350,000 units of affordable housing have been built in the Twin Cities, with 25% being built in the suburban transit area. Microtransit has become a critical mobility lifeline for those living in affordable housing, and as more is built, the demand for microtransit will only grow. I am happy to take any questions now.
Thank you, Mr. Chilton. Questions, members? Right. Would anyone else like to testify on Senate File 2804? All right. Senator Port.
Thank you, Chair Dibble, and Senator Carlson. Thank you for bringing this bill. I've heard a lot from my community that this is a desperate need for people who have mobility concerns. That first and last mile is sometimes what they need, but really the incredible help in getting to run errands, doctor's appointments, and groceries. This is a huge need. I appreciate you bringing this bill.
Senator Carlson.
Well, Mr. Chair, one of the things that I guess while I sat here was to notice that I had some stats on the microtransit post-pandemic ridership, and I think they're all obsolete now. It's because it's gone way over 100% increase, 185% increase in MBTA, and every other suburban area, Suburban Transit Association, has just leapt over the prior ridership pre-pandemic. So this is really important to for us to pay attention to. And I personally know people that are using it, and they reflect the same kind of satisfaction that you've heard from the testifiers here. So it's a good thing.
I concur, Senator Carlson. Appreciate your bringing this bill forward. I think there's actually, I've had some preliminary discussions with Metro Transit, which of course serves riders outside of the opt-out communities, and of course, you know, the entirety of the core cities. And we have significant last mile issues as well, which are solved in a number of different ways. But there needs to be, you know, there's not a bus on every corner. You know, sometimes you have to walk a half mile or more. So even the microtransit last mile issues that just get people up to the regular route service or the transit ways and guideways, is something we're all thinking about. So appreciate your kicking off this conversation. So with that, we can lay this bill over for possible, unless there's anything else from anyone or any other testifiers. All right. And I think Senator Carlson already had the final word.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we'll lay Senate File 2804 over for possible inclusion. Senator McEwen is presenting a bill in judiciary. So hang on one sec. All right, so why don't we do this? I think I'm a co-author on the bill. Is that true? Yes. All right. So I'll just kind of represent the bill from here. Why don't we distribute the amendment to all the stakeholders in the audience as well as the members? We'll have some discussion and figure out if we want to... we're certainly not going to adopt the amendment without Senator McEwen in the room, but... We'll see how much anxiety it provokes, if it invokes too much anxiety, we'll just move the bill on to energy and continue to work on the solution that Senator Jasinski and I have, and MnDOT have identified. So why don't we wait just one second until it gets out into the audience. All right. Everyone mob that guy if you want an amendment. All right. So everyone who needs the amendment in hand, I hope has it, and we'll ask Mr. Greenfield to help us understand it. To A3.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I am looking at the A3 to Senate File 2591. This language was passed out beginning of the day by the agency, but I'll kind of go instruction by instruction and kind of reflect the state of play of this amendment relative to what the committee's taken testimony on so far. Page 1, line 19, that instruction refers to what Commissioner Dobenberger identified as the potential need to clear the right-of-way for any public safety hazard that might occur. I understand that there might be needing further clarification about whether certain activities such as drainage or other types of activities in the right-of-way might require further clarification. So that first instruction is, I think, an open invitation for further insertion of needed language. The second instruction is the page 2 after line 2. We're inserting two sections, the first of which is just making the change in the section 2 that is then brought in for section 3. So this in section 2 is talking about just any trunk highway route as opposed to the exception for reimbursement that is triggered for the national highway system. And since we're sunsetting that reimbursement provision in Section 3, that is why that conforming change in Section 2 is made. Section 3 is 16146, Subdivision 2. That is the reimbursement section for utilities. The paragraph B is the new language. And again, I believe the phrase any utility facility might need or require further clarification, but whether that's within the ambit of our committee's jurisdiction or its next stop in energy and utilities, if that's the intention to go, that might require further language clarification at that stop, or someone from the audience might be willing to provide certain language. But with that, it's a pretty straightforward amendment in the sense of the amount that's being inserted, but there are some potential oral changes that could be made before we adopt the A3 amendment.
Thank you. So, committee, any reaction from committee to the A3? And I think I'll also invite if MnDOT or anyone from the utility sector is ready to respond with at least initial response and reaction to the A3, we would invite you forward. All right, so Mr. Evans will represent the utilities. Commissioner Nobmerberger, of course, will represent MnDOT. All right, who would like to go first? Mr. Evans.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Commissioner. I don't know too much more than I knew a minute ago, except that my boss is our transmission VP and the president of NSP Minnesota, asked that we be able to have some conversations with the department. We'd like to have those before you add them to the bill, but if you add the amendment and it goes to energy, then that will give us an opportunity to have those conversations. I truly don't know if this is a big deal, a little deal, or a moderate deal to the utility companies, and so I don't want to say any more than that, except we certainly want to work this out and figure out, what the impact would be, and maybe the Energy Committee is the place to have that discussion. So I'll maybe leave it at that.
Maybe, but there's some interest in the Trunk Highway Fund, too. So Commissioner Dobenberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for letting me comment on Amendment A3. Appreciate that there's an insertion, except as necessary to protect public safety. That does cover the traffic safety or operational concerns. It's more broad, but I understand that to cover the safety and operational concerns that I raised earlier on Senate File 2591, and then near the bottom there, the notwithstanding paragraph A, any utility facility installed after January 1st of 2024 is not eligible for relocation reimbursement. That does address our ongoing concern about new utilities being installed into the right-of-way of interstates and being exempt from the need to pay for their own relocation as projects come along. The January 1st of 2024 would give some time for projects in development to allow for those utility companies who we're currently working with on the project development to still be grandfathered in, as well as all the utilities out there on the interstate right-of-way currently would be grandfathered in.
Thank you. So members, I think I detect that we're not quite there. I am aware that if this amendment doesn't go on, it probably doesn't actually need to go to energy. If it does go on, it creates an cost for utilities. It does need to go to energy. But I don't think we can resolve this question absent Senator McEwen, who is pinned down in judiciary for the foreseeable period of time. I don't think we're in a mad rush to wrap this bill up. So my suggestion, if the committee concurs, is to lay this bill on the table and we'll come back to it next week. All right. So Senate File 2591 is laid on the table. Don't know if I need to tap the gavel. I think that concludes our business for today, members. We did pretty well. A little under two hours. Yay, we can go celebrate St. Patrick's Day for those of you who don't have more bills to present. I have two bills to present, so I'll have to enjoy St. Patrick's Day in Judiciary Committee. Sounds like a party. And then next week, I think we have developed our list of 12 bills that we're going to hear on Monday. Unless we're going to pull this bill in, then it'll be 13 bills. So that list should be posted soon. If it's not already, I've already notified our lead of those bills. And then we will also start developing kind of how we're going to close out second deadline week. And so we're going to have those bills posted much earlier than we did this agenda. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did see a preview of that list, so I just want to thank you for adding so many of my caucus's bills, and so we really appreciate that. Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. Look forward to those conversations. All right. With that, members, we are adjourned.